I don't want to do weight loss. I want to save people. I don't want to watch what I'm eating. I don't want to exercise. I don't want to hydrate. I don't want to do anything because it's too big a change. And now with social media, you've got everybody and anybody telling you what to do. When things are simple, people think, what's the catch?
Hi, my name's Hunter. I will be your host today on the Another Angle podcast. We're in the right-angled Hammersmith offices. I'm here with Van Patel, who is a weight loss dietitian and emotional eating coach. We're going to be covering all things food intake, weight loss, all of the above, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for coming in. It's great to have you here. I know we've been in communications for the last couple of months, but it's nice to finally get this time to have a sit down and learn what you're all about.
Thanks, Hunter. Thanks for inviting me over.
It's all good. It's all good. I mean, I guess we'll kind of get stuck straight into it. So I guess just for our audience out there as well, so I know that you're the self-proclaimed dietologist.
That's
I think
right.
I've
Shall I explain what that is?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so my name's Van Patel and I'm a dietitian.
Okay.
The dietologist is just a brand name. And I help women lose weight holistically, whether they have surgery, injections, or they just want to lose weight alone without any form of tool.
Okay. So you operate on kind of that full spectrum, right? Like you're not specifically focused on, let's say, women over 40 BMI or like closer to like that 25 kind of range where they're just trying to lose a few pounds.
No, it's generally anybody that wants to lose weight. And it's because, and I do focus on women more so, it's just I align with them and I understand them. And because they've gone through so much emotional trauma to get to the point of wanting to have injections to help them lose weight or surgery. So, and I love that process of demystifying things and helping them holistically to fuel their body rather than restrict or deprive using fad diets because they've been there and done all of that. And you really don't want to be doing that once you've had surgery or taken injections.
Definitely not. I completely hear that. So when these women do come in to see you, do you find that they've obviously been going through all of those fad diets, they've been trying every method in the book over an extended period of time, or like is that the typical case?
A lot of the women that I speak to might be in their 30s and 40s that are really struggling.
Okay.
And their relationship with food has probably been messed up from a very young age, and I'm talking age 6, 7.
I was going to say, it sounds like, I know, especially just from, you know, experience with like other women and just, you know, hearing about some of their stories, that seems to be instilled from very early on, like depending on their relationship with food, especially within like a family environment that might have been skewed.
Absolutely, yes. And you know, a lot of these women have had family, their parents have been overweight or their mothers really struggled with their weight, and they've literally absorbed the habits and behaviours that they've seen surrounding them. And it can be really difficult to try and demystify these things once you get to an older age, because they've done the Weight Watchers, they've done the Slimming Well, they've done the keto, they've done the counting the points, counting calories, and they're just completely lost. And now with social media, you've got everybody and anybody telling you what to do. And I think it's making our job as health professionals even more difficult because they've lost that faith in the system, but more so with these fad diets.
I mean, obviously working on like the marketing side of this industry, like it is just interesting the amount of dialogue that there is out there, whether it be skewed to be correct or wrong. It's just, I think just the sheer volume, I'm not sure if people really understand where to look, which I guess is where you come in as well, having that, I guess you would say almost like an authoritative standpoint where it's like, this is something that I've learned over years of study and doing it in practice.
Yeah.
Like you should take my opinion into consideration.
Sometimes you have to walk the journey yourself as well with these things. And I think I've been doing this for over 33 years. Mm. I feel I know these women before they even come to me.
Right.
And they start to tell me all these things about their relationship with food, how they feel that they've struggled with their weight from a very young age, 6, 7 years of old, and now realise, actually, I never had a problem with my weight. But society made them feel they had a problem. Their parents made them feel that they had a problem.
Gotcha.
A boy may have told them something like they're overweight.
And it's just kind of stuck.
Yeah,
right.
It is. And so even women going with their mums to Weight Watchers at an age of under 16. And really, I don't think that should be allowed. But this is what happened many, many years ago. And these women are probably the women that are coming to you for the injections now. And they're looking for a... I really don't want to use the word quick fix, but I am. They're looking for a fix to help their relationship with food, stop the cravings, stop the binges. They want to get away their hunger. And GLP-1 does this. So why not take it? And it's all over social media.
I mean, it's massively trending right now, right? So is that typically the, I guess, the solution that people are actively seeking when they do come to you?
Yeah, they're coming to me for the injections. They're coming to me, what do I need to do? I know I can get these injections, and what do I do with them? How do I eat? What's it going to fix? And the biggest worry is, when I come off them, am I going to put the weight back on?
It's a relapse factor, right? And I've seen it a lot as well, because it seems like that's the general concern and the consensus across social media, is that everyone thinks that obviously they're losing the weight with the medications now. When they do come off it, like, are they just going to snap back to their habits previously? But I don't know. I personally believe that it's very much it's a habitual change, right? Yeah. That they need to be implementing across the board. And at the end of the day, the GLP-1 medications are just restricting that food noise, like you say, and then also just suppressing their appetite. But I think when it comes down to it, it's them putting in the effort. Like, I think if they have lost a significant amount of weight, they should be crediting themselves. I think it seems like they're very hard on the fact that they are leaning on the medication, that they couldn't have done it without it. But realistically, I think it shows that there is that willpower there. They just needed something reliable that they could go.
And Hunter, I don't even think this is about willpower. And this morning I was listening to a podcast, and it was a woman on Manjaro, and she was just saying, you know, I feel I've got my willpower. And I was like, no, it's not about willpower. It's making those small, sustainable changes in your life, because weight loss isn't just about taking the injections and changing your food or depriving yourself of food. It's about learning, how do I fuel my body correctly? What does my plate look like, rather than thinking how many calories are on there? Because calories are going to give you a number, which is what women are obsessed with. Number of calories, how many grams of protein, the number on the scale. It's all numbers, numbers, numbers. But actually, if we really strip it back, what does your plate look like? Because you could have 200 calories on a plate full of chocolate and 200 calories full of protein, veggies and carbs. But how your body hormonally responds to those calories is going to be very different.
Oh, 100%. Like, I've come from a gymming background now. I've lost the weight over years. I've got a pretty good understanding on, like, the calories in, calories out. But also, I think when I first kicked off, I was obsessed with the whole protein intake. And it was like, I remember having days at university when I was like 19, like getting into it. You know what boys are like when they're teenagers? They're just wanting all of the chicken and the protein bars.
Oh, yeah.
Did it for a week, and I magically felt horrific afterwards. I was sick for about 4 days, and then it was obvious. It's just like, oh, it's because I've just been eating chicken tenders and like these.
But you were having keto flu, as they call it, right? 100%.
So it's like, I think having that understanding on what you're actually putting into your body, and obviously those micro and macronutrients, are essential, because at the end of the day, I can't remember what the video was I watched back in the day, but I think it was quite negative in the sense that, obviously, like, if you're in a caloric deficit, you will still technically lose weight. Like, if I ate 1800 calories of jelly beans versus you know, having a balanced diet, I would still technically lose weight, but I would feel horrendous. So I think that's the difference, and where people really need to kind of take themselves out of calories. Obviously, it's still an important measure to understand, but I think fixating on it too much without you know.
And that's what women are great at, fixating on one thing and having this all or nothing mindset. So they're 100% doing something, counting their calories, counting their protein. They've gone full in on the exercise, they're hydrating. And then all of a sudden, it's too much hard work for them. And all of a sudden, it's like they're in the nothing. I don't want to watch what I'm eating. I don't want to exercise. I don't want to hydrate. I don't want to do anything, because it's too big a change. And the reason behind this all or nothing mindset, which I believe every woman that is struggling to lose weight has initially, unless if they've worked with me or worked with someone on it, is that they're expecting these fast results. So I'm sure with the weight loss injections, I mean, I do, I get lots of DMs about, I'm not losing enough weight. I'm not losing weight fast enough. And it's this, everything has to be quick. The results have to be quick.
Yeah.
My exercise has to be quick. My eat, everything has to be so quick. But actually, we need to all slow down, especially if you're struggling with your weight, because you need to think about, actually, how am I fueling my body? What can I do? Because the biggest thing that I hear a lot is, I haven't got time to prep or plan. And I'm like, that's great. What can we get from the supermarket that's already prepped for you, that's healthy and it's going to not just nourish your body, which is what everyone focuses on. How about thinking about how's it going to fuel my brain? How's it going to make me feel? And I think this is what most women will need to focus on. How is food making me feel, rather than what's that number on the scale? Why have I gained this week? Or why have I stayed stable? And also, weight loss isn't linear. It doesn't just go down. There's
fluctuations everywhere.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, I think fixating too hard on the scales, especially from my own personal experiences, it is detrimental to an extent.
I've been there and done it, and I feel that the more we focus on one thing and I remember it well, then the weigh myself every day, three times a day, why isn't that scale moving? When I was training to be a dietitian, and all of a sudden one day I just got so fed up with them, threw them out the window, and all of a sudden I started to lose weight. And it's not that I was extremely overweight. I was just carrying a lot of puppy fat, I'd say. But I let go of that number, and all of a sudden, because I wasn't focusing on that and I was actually probably eating better, which I know that I was, all of a sudden things started to fall into place. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting, which is what's led me on this journey. It's not about what you eat. It's about why you're eating.
Okay. So do you think that's like having that experience? Do you think that's what really drove you to being so passionate about women's health and obviously understanding that weight loss process?
Absolutely. But I'll be honest, initially, when I started out as a dietitian, I was like, weight loss, everyone associates dietitians with weight loss. I don't want to do weight loss. I want to save people. So I actually did a few years as a kidney dietitian, because diet was super important. And in fact, we restricted protein, and we still do to a certain element. We have to restrict protein because the kidneys flush out excess protein and it's a waste product.
Right.
And that's why I have a really good understanding about protein, because we had to count every gram. And protein, just as in meat and dairy foods, there's also small amounts of low biological value in grains as well.
Yeah.
And potatoes and starches. So when it comes to protein, I know where it's coming from. And it's not just your meat and dairy.
Definitely.
But yeah, and that was because of that job. But then afterwards I was like, gosh, I came across bariatric surgery, and then I was in that for, and I found it fascinating, and now injections and putting it all together, which is what's led me on this journey from my own experiences, because it's the emotional behaviours and habits and the lifestyle changes that come with it that make the biggest impact. It's not just about food, but we focus so much on food.
I mean, I was going to ask, because obviously you get all of these patients coming in, obviously asking for your advice. Do you find that it is very, like, patient to patient, how unique their body responds to certain food intake? Or do you find that there is kind of an overarching balance that everyone can strive towards?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much there is a pattern that I see, which has helped me create a lot of digital products. Like, okay, first we've got to get the foundations right. Let's fuel your body first, right? Once we've focused on fueling your body, because a lot of them undereat, and I know that a lot of women on GLP-1s will naturally undereat because they don't feel hungry. The food noise is gone, and you've got to literally force yourself to eat. And so fueling your body is really important. So it's always getting those foundations right. It's like building a house. If the foundations aren't great, or they're not the right depth, you're going to get cracks on the walls, and then eventually the house is going to subside, right? So it's the same when it comes to your life and weight loss and health. We've got to get the foundations right. So we work on fueling the body first. Then we move on to actually lifestyle changes. So things like exercise, you know, and not having that all or nothing mindset. And my focus is always, let's get your steps in first. If you're not getting your steps in, because steps is fat loss.
Yeah.
And it's low stress, right? Get your steps in, then go into low resistance training, things like Pilates, yoga, using your own body weight, then move on to weights.
Yeah.
But you've got to be fueling your body right to do all of this.
Definitely.
Then stress. Got to work on stress. Stress causes inflammation. GLP helps with this. So we've got to work on stress, sleep. If you don't sleep well, you're not going to be losing weight.
No.
Because your body has to rest, recover, and recuperate in order to create those hormones that help with weight loss.
I think that's a massive oversight that a lot of people take, because obviously the impression is that, especially with weight loss, it's obviously food intake, how much I'm moving. But I think having that downtime as well, the biggest benefits that I've personally seen from when I am working on myself is having those restful periods, and then you magically come back stronger. It's just like, oh, well, obviously I'm allowing my body to kind of recuperate over that time period. And I think it's a massive oversight that people really just don't take on board. They're not, you know, getting 7+ hours a day. You know, they're not looking after themselves.
And it's because it's boring.
Yeah. No, of course it's boring.
You know, talking about sleep and, you know, is my sleep good?
Yeah.
Isn't really sexy, is it? And also stress. God, it's hard work to manage stress.
Yeah.
You know, most people would rather be on a screen, blue light, having all of this affecting their sleep, affecting their stress levels. But stress is probably one of the top things I have an intake form, and on that, everyone will say that they are stressed. Everyone will say that they're not sleeping well. And it's a pattern. So these things need to be managed along with hydration and your diet and everything else that I've spoken about. So that's why we have to look at weight loss holistically and not just what's going in with food and what we're burning with calories. Absolutely. With exercise, it's so important.
Do you think that stress would be considered almost the contributing factor?
Absolutely. Because when we're stressed, we don't eat regularly, we crave, we eat, we use food to dampen our emotions, to control stress, it's a distraction. Stress means that we don't sleep well. Stress also means cortisol levels are high, increased cravings, we're in fat storage mode rather than fat burning mode, we go into survival mode. And if when we're in survival mode, we are not going to be losing weight. Your body is just holding on. So I talk about with my ladies, three different stresses we need to work on. Nutritional stress, and that's under-eating. So we need to feel your body right. Then emotional stress, so that's your relationship with food, the binging, the cravings, and so forth. And also then exercise stress, physical stress, over-exercising, not doing the right types of it. So doing lots of cardio, which increases your stress levels, where we want to bring your stress levels down. So introduce some Pilates or yoga or just stretching or walking, rather than having like 2 hours in the gym on a bike or trying to run.
Well, it's super intense, right? Like people will jump to the furthest extent that they can, and they're shocked that they crash after.
Yeah, and it's that all or nothing mindset again, isn't it?
Do you think that's kind of the main thing that deters people that might be higher up on the BMI scale, that they think that it is all just a bit too much and that it's just easier to...
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to go to the gym if I felt that, you know, people would be staring at me. And I get that. And that's why I'm always very much about less is more. What can you do now that means that you may not even need to leave your house? What can you do? And I think that's so important. It's a question that not many people get asked when they're struggling with their weight. What's possible for you? I've got some ladies that are on GLP-1s and have had possible surgery or just want to lose weight alone. And I'll say 5 minutes. Everyone's got 5 minutes. What can you do in 5 minutes? Stretching, using cans of beans. What is it that you can do for 5 minutes? And they're like, is that it? And I go, yeah.
Just moving your body a little bit more, right? You'll see massive results out of it down the line. I mean, I think more or less leaning on to the kind of weight loss surgery side of things as well. I know you're very vocal about it across TikTok. I was having quite a good scroll yesterday just in preparation. And, you know, you got a lot of really great insights from there. I think just first and foremost, like what would those typical candidates really look like, where you assess the situation and go like, hey, like this is probably a bit more viable right now than potentially taking those GLP-1 medications?
Well, I suppose That's not an easy question to answer.
No.
So I think it's preference and budget. Okay. And how long have you been struggling with your weight? Because you could work out the difference in how much are you going to spend on injections versus the cost of surgery.
True.
And also the clientele that are coming to you. You're always going to get some clientele that are coming to you that have had surgery abroad because it's all about cost.
Yeah.
And they're the type of people that are possibly going to be waiting on some form of NHS waiting list to get the injections because right now they feel that they can't afford it.
Mm.
But saying that, I think weight loss injections have become very affordable.
It's definitely dropping in price.
Yeah. And obviously from company to company, and I know you guys have good deals here.
Mm.
But I think it's become very affordable. So I would probably say to someone, what shall I do?
Mm.
Obviously have an in-depth conversation and say, well, why don't you try the GLP-1s as your first method of trying to use a tool and see how you get on. And, you know, maybe that's all you need. But I think when you start getting into the heavier BMIs of 50, I think sometimes it's like having that conversation and maybe surgery is going to be the better option. Mm.
Yeah, I know from a clinical standpoint, when we are bringing people on board for the GLP-1s, obviously, I think it's 27 for like diabetics. There's a few other, you know, conditions that we consider in that in those parameters. But then it's 30 plus BMI for someone just to be able to apply, will have their consultation reviewed, and then they will be able to, you know, gain access to the medication. But I know that we've got a top end as well, like you talk about. I think it's for 55 BMI, we will go, this is something that should be considered, you know, we should defer you to a clinical surgery. So, yeah.
You will get some patients that will go on the injections at that higher range just to lose that 5 or 10% to show that they can make those lifestyle changes that they also need to do when they have surgery. So I really do see GLP-1s as the medical version of having a gastric bypass, but you're just physically not shrinking the stomach or having 80% of it removed, which is what bariatric surgery would do.
Mm. Okay, interesting. I mean, I was going to lean more or less into the angle of just, I guess, like nationwide obesity rates. So I was having a look at a couple of charts recently, and like childhood obesity rates are slowly increasing. I think they've kind of plateaued at the moment, but it is significantly larger than what we would have seen back in the 70s and 80s. Do you think that there's a gap in nutritional education, or do you think, you know, food marketing
You're
has
about
a...
to open a can of worms. Absolutely. Yeah. It needs to start from literally very early.
Yeah.
Infant school.
Yeah.
Junior school. It's secondary. Nutrition needs to be a huge part of what children are learning, along with how to live, finances, learning about mortgages, you know, the real things that we need to know as young adults when we're starting out in life, when we cut the cord from our parents, you know.
Trying to figure everything out.
Yeah, and I think cooking and things like that, they were on the timetable when I was at school, which was a long, long time ago. But I don't think they're so important. And I think nutrition, in Japan, they have a fantastic education system with regards to their food, what they get in school meals. That's what we need to be mimicking.
Absolutely. I know I'm trying to think who rolled out. Was it Jamie Oliver that was rolling out the new
school dinners? Turkey Twizzlers.
Has that changed anything like significantly or?
From what my children were telling me what they were getting at food, no.
Not really.
No, I don't think. I think it did make an impact, but I'm not sure what schools are doing now. But what I do know from... I mean, because my children are out of school now, but from my children's experience of school, where I'd say, oh, what did you eat today? And it might be burgers and fries, or but they were older and they were able to choose.
Yeah.
But I think there's always a budget when it comes to schools, right?
And
But I think when I was at school was in the 70s and 80s, food was a lot better.
Mm.
So much better. It was freshly cooked.
Yeah.
You knew you were getting, you'd have a bit of, as I would say, fun food, as well as having good, substantial food.
Actual whole foods,
and I felt like it followed this rule that I talked to my clients about, this 80-20 rule about everything that we do, try and do it as well as you can 80% of the time, but 20% of the time, relax, have some fun food, and be intentional about it.
Absolutely.
And this is how you improve your relationship with your health and your diet and your emotional eating, by having these intentional, I know it's a rule and I don't really have very many rules, but that's one rule I'll say, look, this is a rule that's really helped me live my life and be healthier, keep my weight stable. But I think it's such an important rule to have.
Definitely. I mean, I guess sustainability is such an important measure to have in place as well, right? Because I think both sides of the scale, obviously you've got people eating horrifically, and you can take that from a completely objective standpoint. You can look at it and go like, well, that's not fueling your body correctly. But also, if you are so stringent on all of your nutrients, you know, ensuring that you're within, you know, like 2 or 3 calories of your intake, it's unhealthy, right? There is a point where it is detrimental. You talk about stress. I think being so acute on measuring
it's really stressful. Counting calories is stressful.
100%.
Tracking 100% of the time is stressful.
Yeah.
That in itself is hard work, but women believe, and also men, they've got to be doing it every day, every meal, everything. And I know I've been there and done it. It's just too much hard work. Why can't you just look at your weight and, I mean, your plate. Yeah. Why can't you look at your plate and just think, there's a good amount of protein on there. Mm. Right, I'm going to be definitely getting about 30 grams of protein because half of my plate is full of protein. And I've got a good quarter or a third of a plate there as fibre from my veggies.
Yeah.
And then I've got a small amount of carbs. That's a perfectly balanced plate to lose weight.
I think those are very, well, I think obviously to both of us, it's obvious principles to have in place. But I think to a lot of people, we talk about the educational side. I think that is something that's missing and people aren't really thinking about that.
That's because carbs are cheap.
That's true.
Look at lot of the Weight Watchers meals. Mm. I had a lady that I was working with, and so we spoke about ready meals, and she's going, I've got a freezer full of Weight Watchers meals. I said, oh, do you want to just get one out and just let's have a look at it? Because I knew what was in it.
Mm.
And she goes, oh, well, there's a bit of chicken. I go, is it at the top of the list? No, it's right at the close to the bottom. But there's a lot of rice in it. I said, right, so that means this meal is carb loaded.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of money on it. And I go, yes, but carbs are cheap. You need to be more
more mindful.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just simple tips and tricks like that. And I think when things are simple, people think, what's the catch? Looking at my plate, what's the catch in that? There's got to be more to it. No, actually, the simpler it is, the more likely you're going to stick to things.
Definitely.
And this is why I say it's not about willpower. It's about making sustainable changes that you can keep to for life.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's conscious decision making, right?
Yeah.
Like even, I think this was like the first thing that I kind of learnt when I was properly going into losing the weight. But I think like an oversight on like sauces and oils makes a drastic difference. You can still eat almost identically, but if you're being a bit more considerate in that sense, then you're already kind of taking the right step.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree. Just out of interest, Connor, when you say when you were trying to lose weight, how much weight have you lost?
Oh, I ended up cutting 30 kilos in 2023. Yeah. So I went down from, I think it was 114. And I'm a tall guy. So, you know, I held the weight. But, you know, it was one of those things that was always in the back of my mind. And like, I've been gymming for years. I was just like, well, none of it's budging. I was able to move a lot of weight, but my whole process was just, I just need to ingest all this protein. And then I just had all of these other cheat meals kind of sitting everywhere. Like I'd get KFC a couple times a week. So I was just like, chicken, isn't it?
Yeah, it's protein.
100%. But I just didn't really have much consideration in that sense. I was aware of what I should have been doing nutritionally, but I was never enacting on it. And as soon as I moved out of my flat when I was, would have been 23 at the time, I knew I was moving to the UK, went living with my uncle, and I just decided it was probably a good time for me to actually stick into it. I did start tracking my calories because I wanted to have a bit more of an understanding there. Mm. And yeah, I think it was quite drastic. I wouldn't, you know, recommend it to everyone, but I've managed to hold off the weight. But it's, I had a massive calorie deficit. I lost the weight in about 7 months.
That's pretty quick.
I would say,
lose that amount of weight.
It was quick, but I was very considerate about what I was doing, the amount of carbs I was ingesting as well. So I knew what I needed to do. And if there were days where I was feeling a bit depleted, like energy-wise, I'd just eat more because I
love
knew,
it.
Yeah, yeah,
love it. You were listening to your body,
definitely.
And that is what people aren't good at.
Yeah,
they're hungry. All of a sudden, it's not about the fact that your body needs to be fueled. It's like the injections aren't working.
Yeah, and I think that's the point that people jump to, and I think that's where my experience kind of comes in. When I do hear that, I'm like, well, it's not necessarily the case. It's just, you know, your body's always going to be fluctuating ever so slightly. But if you're on like an average trajectory down, if I put on a kilogram like 1 week, I wouldn't go, oh, you know, I haven't done enough or XYZ. I think it's the principle of actually, you know, if you are tracking your weight, just being able to zoom out and just understand the amount of progress that you have made. And I think derailing over a very small rock in the rows, I wouldn't say it's illogical, it's the wrong word, but I think people just need to really sit down and just understand that what they're doing is really beneficial.
There's a few things that I really love about what you've just said.
Yeah.
One, you track your calories, and you're probably thinking, but Van, you were just saying, don't track your calories. But tracking your calories just to find out actually what am I consuming?
Yeah.
So then you know actually, right, I need to cut back about 250 or 500, however many you want to cut back on.
Yeah.
So that could be a useful tool with tracking.
Definitely.
The other thing that I love is that you said, I listen to my body. Mm. If I was hungry, I was like, oh, my body's telling me actually I need to eat a bit more today.
Yeah.
Whatever the reasons are, maybe you trained that day. Then the other thing that you said was the fact that if you had one bad day, it didn't mean it was all over.
No.
Which is such a brilliant thing that you've just said there, because most people go off track and that's it. They go into kind of swear.
Yeah. Oh, we can bleep it out if you want.
It'll be fuck it mode, I call it. They go into fuck it mode and they fuck everything. And they don't want it. They don't want to follow their plan. They don't want to even look at their plate. It's like, the world is over. I'm not sticking to any diet.
Which is it's an insane reaction to have.
And
I personally don't understand. Obviously, like I say, I've seen it, I've dealt with it, I've done it. And it's just such a simple thing where you just need to really step back, have an understanding of what you have been doing really well. The fact that you've put on a kilo, grain of salt, whatever, moving to the next week. I guess if it persists, then you probably need to review what you're doing, right? But I think aside from that, people are too hard on themselves.
Yeah, no, I've got a community, and in this community on a Friday, I'll say it's called Friday Wins.
Mm.
Write down whether you're stable. You don't need to write down your weight. Stable, have you lost? What great things have happened for you? Does it need to be about your weight?
Yeah.
And I'll get women on there sometimes saying, oh, I've gained this week.
Mm.
I'm like, that's fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
Could you have gained because you've gained some muscle?
Mm.
Could you be, is it that time of the month and you're holding a bit more fluid? Maybe you actually finally ate some carbs yesterday.
Mm.
And so that's why you're an extra pound heavier this week.
Yeah.
But again, doesn't mean it's all over.
No.
But I think seeing a gain for a woman that is trying to lose weight, it's like game over. And then they go into the fuck it mode again, It's everything's over.
Blow it out.
It's like it's done. There's no point.
Definitely.
I'm useless. I'm no good at this.
Yeah.
Nothing works. And then they lose faith in the injections or the surgery or my advice. You know, but the thing is that a tool can't fix you, but it can certainly help you.
God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously what we see with the medications as well, right? Like if you need that anchor to support you, then so be it, right? And if it's helping, then...
And it's doing so many things. These medications are helping suppress your appetite.
Yeah.
They're slowing down the gut so they're not emptying, so you're not as hungry.
Mm.
The food noise. But also they're helping with inflammation, which is all stress-related.
Mm.
Three physicals, you know, the physical, the emotional, the nutritional stresses. Mm. It's focusing on that, which for some women is really difficult. And also insulin resistance, which I see in very many menopausal women like myself, and I've had to really change what I'm doing and really focus on my stress, take a bit of my own medicine, because cortisol is the mother of evil.
Okay.
Yeah, the mother of evil when it comes to weight loss, because if your cortisol isn't in check, you can do everything. You can cut the calories, you can do it all, and that belly fat is just not going to move.
It's just not going to move.
And that's where women... So I think in America, I know that women that are menopausal that have started to gain weight on HRT or without it, GLP-1 is probably being prescribed in very, very low doses to help with that inflammation. So I think there's going to be many different things that we see with GLP-1 in the future, not just to do with weight loss, but with helping manage other conditions.
Interesting. So do you think the categories that we've got at the moment, they're going to slowly expand?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And if you think about it, everybody that is taking GLP-1s right now is all part of the data collection.
True.
You know, this company will have a legal obligation to submit data about side effects, results, anything, you know, because it's a huge experiment if you really think about it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like, well, we're in the very early years. Like, you wouldn't call it a mature medication yet. Mm. So I think
they have been around for some time.
How long do you know?
Probably for about 10 years, maybe a little bit longer.
Okay,
but in the form of things like Victoza, Saxenda. I mean, that's probably what, 5 years ago, maybe a bit longer. Mm. But they've definitely been around. But obviously, it's used for diabetes.
Yeah.
But actually, when they started gathering results, people are losing weight on these medications.
I think that's more or less what I mean. Mm. Like, when it comes into more of the weight loss side of things.
Yeah, for the weight loss side, it's a more of a recent thing. But for the diabetes controls, they've been around for a fair amount of time.
I know you've talked very heavily on women's health. Do you find, obviously, you don't really deal with many male clients?
I do work with some.
Okay. Do you find that, so obviously with women actually coming to you, having kind of that admission of, I need help.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a difference between the sexes in being able to step forward and go, I actually need to talk to someone specifically?
Simple answer, yes. It's just like men. They don't, if you look at GP results of who go to see them, it's mainly women.
Oh, 100%. I completely agree. I am a perfect example. I will never go to the doctor unless I am strictly almost dying. Like, there's no in between.
So men will wait till there's a problem.
Yeah.
And then they will wait to be told, you've got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So usually the GP.
Yeah.
And then they will act. Otherwise, they will quite happily
just cruise.
Plod along.
Yeah. Even if you can tell that there's something wrong, it's just nobody.
I'll sort it out. It's not that much of a problem, or it's not really affecting my health.
Yeah.
Whereas I think for women, for women, it's physical. Mm. You can see it. Mm. They don't like it. Men, they're just like, it's just being a man, isn't it?
Well, I think there's also probably a bit more social acceptance, which is a terrible thing. But for men to be, in their 40s, a bit overweight, it's like, he's just had a few beers over his life, whereas a woman, you know, a little bit more packed on.
That belly fat used to be called a beer gut.
Yeah.
My dad had one.
Yeah.
We used to say we're going to put a tap in it and get the beer out. But men are renowned to have a beer gut.
Yeah.
But now it's all turned to the word belly fat.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, which I think it's a good thing, obviously, to kind of leveling the playing field, I think, is the wrong way to describe it, but I think that that public perception should be equal throughout, right? Like, it's not fair to put more pressure on women, especially with their, you know, body figure compared to men.
Look, men and women are different. They think differently I work with men, they're a lot more logical.
Mm.
So if I say, right, we're going to make these changes and this is what we need to do, 9 times out of 10, they'll do it.
Okay.
With women, there's a lot more emotion about it. But not just that.
Right.
They're looking after children. They're probably looking after their parents. They're looking after their husband. They're working. Mm. There's a lot more factors in it. But with men, they're a lot more logical because they've got that time. They've got that space. And also, if it's anything to do with diet, they'll tell the wife, this is what's on my plan. You know, it's like there's not so much responsibility.
Yeah.
So... And also, hormonally, they're built differently. You've got testosterone. Testosterone helps with weight loss. It helps build muscle, gives you strength. So
it's always going to be an easier process.
Yeah, for them. And that's why women always say, gosh, you know, I eat very similar. In fact, I eat less than my partner, but I just look at a cake and I put the weight on where he can eat the cake and eat very similar, if not more than what I'm eating and be on a diet and he's losing. Why is that?
Yeah.
And this is where hormones come to play.
Definitely. Mm. I think, yeah, you talk about hormones. I think getting an understanding on like individuals, like metabolisms as well. Does that become a really massive factor? Let's say if you are specifically talking to women, is there significant differences in like genetic makeups that all impact their metabolism and therefore, you know, how they respond
possibly.
To
and if
how
you
they're
think
eating?
About it, when it comes mainly to women, because I think women generally start diets very young in age.
Mm.
They go on these very low calorie diets, so they want to lose weight, but it's a very general term, weight loss.
Yeah.
We've got to be looking at muscle loss, fat loss.
Yeah.
And they're actually losing a lot of muscle on these low calorie diets. So they lose weight initially really quickly, which everybody loves.
Mm.
They're on this all or nothing situation. Mm. I'm sticking to this perfect diet, no chocolate, no crisps, no fun. They can do it for a week or two.
Mm.
And they go into, pardon my French, the fuck it mode, because it's just got... Yeah. It's too much to do.
Yeah.
They put on a kilo or two. Oh, God, I've got to get back onto this plan again. And it's a cycle.
Mm.
So each time they're going back onto this very low-calorie diet, they're losing more and more muscle.
Mm.
Where does your metabolic health live? It lives in your muscle.
Mm.
So by the time they're in their 20s, well, late 20s, their 30s, their metabolic health is in the bin.
It's deteriorating. Yeah.
And also, as a result of that, they've got slow metabolisms.
Mm.
So then they're on the next diet, and they're like, nothing works. And then you hit the menopause, the hormones start to come into play, your estrogen levels start to drop. You need estrogen for your metabolism.
Mm.
Your weight distribution changes. It becomes a bit more manual. You carry more weight around your belly region because your estrogen levels are your hormones that give you your shapes and your curves, and it improves your metabolic health.
Mm.
So there's so many things to take into consideration when you're talking to a woman, but generally their metabolic health is probably in the bin if they're on injections or having surgery.
Okay, so I guess for people that are, let's say, pre any of the medications or surgery, let's say they're a woman in their early 20s and wanting to take action, it sounds like the main course of action is to kind of build up some of that muscle just from the gym or just being active, and obviously having that consideration with your protein intake to sustain, I guess, more than anything is what I'm hearing.
So definitely, like I said, I'd probably tell them just start with steps.
Mm.
But the great thing around about a 20-year-old, whether they're going to take medications or not, is the fact that they've not got years and years and years of dieting to recover from.
Mm.
And the habits, the relationship with food is probably not as damaged as someone in their 30s, 40s or 50s.
Right. So it's easier to snap
it's easier to get them to change. And say, actually, rather than depriving and restricting, how about we just actually get you to eat more? And it's like, can't eat more. That's not what they said at Weight Watchers, and that's not what they said at Slimming World or whatever fad diet they've followed. And all of a sudden I said, just trust me on it. We'll just an extra snack. That's all we're going to do this week. Yeah. Just add in an extra snack to what you're doing.
Mm.
Let's just do that for the next week, and then we'll build in something else. Let's see what happens.
Mm.
I didn't lose any weight, man. I said, no, you're not meant to.
Mm.
2-3 weeks in, I'm losing weight and I'm eating more. I said, great. Right, now let's start working on things like steps and strength training to build muscle. Because if you're not eating enough, how are you going to build muscle? Because to build muscle, you need carbs as well for energy, as well as protein. So it's getting that balance right. And also you need fats. Anybody that is trying to lose weight is fearful of fat.
Yeah, I was initially.
Yeah,
as well,
but you need fats for brain function, healthy cells. You need fats for flavor.
Mm.
You need fats to absorb hormones.
It is everything, right? I mean, I think that's why I think we talked about it previously before we even started, like the whole no carb diets are insane to me. Like I've got friends, it's keto, right, usually, but...
Yeah.
Understand it, like obviously I think the process is obviously you're going full fats, and after like a month it's the ketosis kicks in.
Mm.
Like is there actually significant health benefits for it, or do you find it's just more detrimental than anything?
For some children with certain disorders, that keto diet is recommended, and that's where keto is actually originally, that's where it came from.
Okay.
However, if you think if you're doing keto long term, you're going to be missing out on a whole macronutrient group, your carbs, and they provide fiber, they provide vitamins and minerals. Where are they going to come from? Obviously a pill then.
Yeah.
But also for gut health, you need vegetables, fruit, fiber. Mm. And gut health is also involved in weight loss. The bacteria that you produce help with weight loss. So if you took a healthy individual and tested their gut health and compared it to somebody that's struggling with their weight, it will be very different, because they've probably been on the keto, they've been on all these different diets, and they're probably not eating enough carbs. And I'm not saying you've got to have a high carb diet. I'm very much, we need some carbs. It's going to be a low carb diet. And maybe you don't want to have your carbs in the evening. For some people, they do need the carbs in the evening because it helps them sleep. For some people like myself, I function better having carbs during the day and then none in the evening. And I also try not to eat too late, because when I go to sleep, I want to make sure there's a good 3 or 4 hour gap. So I haven't got food that's going to upset my sleep in the evenings.
So do you find that when you are recommending people with these kind of diet plans, that timing is very important as well?
Absolutely, because I think most people will hopefully have a breakfast, and then probably if they're stressed at work or really super busy, they probably don't eat very much during the day. Then they come on the drive home, petrol station, grab a bar of chocolate, and then they wonder why, and they think, oh, I've got to stop this bad habit. And then from the petrol station, they get home, they're cooking their meal, they're grazing away because they're over hungry. They cook their meal, they have it, sit down. Craving. Why are they craving? Because they've not eaten anything during the day.
Yeah.
But the food that they're going to crave is going to be heavy in carbs, chocolate, biscuits, popcorn, crisps, because they haven't eaten. And if you think about it, they're the energy foods, aren't they? So if you're low in energy, what's your brain going to tell you to eat?
It's going to get that quick spike. Interesting. Okay.
So there's so many things that you have to take into consideration when you're trying to lose weight and be healthier.
Well, I mean, it really seems that way, to be fair. Obviously, you've got a pretty good coverage, I think from what I can tell. When it comes to these people coming to you with these, you know, diet / weight loss needs, when you're focusing on someone's rehabilitation, what are kind of like the three key factors that you really hone it on? Like, if you could pick three that you're just going, like, if you knuckle down on these three areas of your life, you will see results.
Food.
Yeah.
Exercise. Stress management.
Amazing. Okay. I mean, yeah, I think that's what this entire episode has really covered, to be fair. But I think it's a really nice way to round off, to be honest. I think it's... obviously all those factors are super important, and I think, like both of us have said, I think kind of walking the talk as well, like, you know, we've both implemented those changes and obviously seen improvements. I think it is clear that I think it's people's relationship with food and understanding their bodies and just listening as well. I think
people think
critical.
Food is the enemy when you're trying to lose weight, but actually treat it like your best friend. Love and respect.
Definitely.
Not have too many expectations from it.
Absolutely.
But it's, you know, food's here for a reason to fuel us. And if women and men start to think like that, and in all fairness, I think most people do, especially if they've worked with me, I really do. That is where we always start the food. Let's get this food right. And they're like, oh, but what about my exercise? No, I don't want you to do anything for the next 2 weeks. Just focus on this. Because you've just told me you haven't got time to prep a plan, you haven't got time to exercise, you haven't got time to get your sleep sorted. But people want to do everything at once. It's that all or nothing mindset that they've got to be 100% perfect.
Yeah.
When actually, I just want 80% perfection. And maybe it's only 40 or 50% perfection I want with you initially, and then we'll just keep building on that.
It's better than nothing, right? It's the whole, like, 1% of, like, incremental gains per day. You know, obviously it compounds and then you're a new person.
Yeah, 1% change can make a huge difference, but people want to see drastic results.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be that main struggle, right? People want to see that massive jump, and I think social media obviously has a massive impact on that as well. People are seeing these, you know, fitness influencers or people that have drastically lost the weight.
Honestly, I watch and I think, oh my God, how do I do that? How do I get like that? You know, even I get rolled into it as well. You get absorbed into it.
100%. I think it's the fact that people obviously see the external, that obviously, you know, these people look great, but I think they're probably forgetting the fact that this has been like years of process that they've put into it. I think people are very easy to just dismiss that is a primary factor.
I completely agree, and that's why I always say to every patient that I work with, weight loss is a journey. That means there's no full stop at the end. You just carry on, because people talk about maintenance. What do I do? Carry on. What are you doing now? Carry on. But I'm going to lose all this weight. I go, you won't. Your body will stop. When it's ready to stop, it will stop.
Definitely.
But you carry on for now.
I think that's one of the other funny things as well, is that people think it's just this catapulting landslide. And obviously there's a point where your body's going to slowly measure that out, and then you're back at what's considered, well, healthy. And
yeah, the body's always calibrating. That's why we have stalls in weight loss, because the body's trying to figure out, what's going on here? Are you in danger and starving? Is that why you're not eating enough? Or is it actually you've made changes and you're getting healthier? Right, okay, I've worked it out now. You seem, you're still eating.
Yeah.
Your stress is going down. Okay, let's carry on with the weight loss. That's all that's going on when you're having a stall. The body is just recalibrating, trying to work out what's going on. Do we need to survive and stop this weight loss because you're not eating enough? Or actually, you're carrying on, you're still fueling. Okay, let's start, let's carry on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's obvious that you're a very good voice in this area of expertise, to be honest. I think you've obviously helped with a lot of people, especially women that are, you know, needing to kind of take control. And it is far more simple than I think what people make it out to be. So it's really great, all the work that you are doing. And
oh, thank you.
Well, but like being able to break it down for people as well, right? Because I think it is, like you say, it is daunting when you first take that step, but being able to simplify it, I think it's what everyone really needs to enact on.
Absolutely. And it is, it's always that fear that it's not going to work, because they've tried so many different things. And it's that fear of investing in, gosh, is this going to work? Well, actually keeping things simple really does help. When women are leading and men, people are people are living these really busy lives. Why wouldn't you want to be simple about things?
Definitely. I think that's a really good place to finish it, to be honest. Yeah. I think that's, thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you for inviting me.
Super insightful, to be fair. This has probably been one of my favourite sessions that we've done. It's just easy, right? Like I think being able to have those open and honest conversations about food intake, I think it's a struggle that everyone can resonate with. So I think your insights will hopefully help quite a few people that are tuning in.
Oh, I hope so, because it's such a sensitive topic, weight.
Definitely.
Especially for someone that is really struggling.
Yeah.
And has lost faith and trust in everybody and anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
Amazing. Well, hopefully this is just one of many conversations that can help people make that informed decision.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. Yeah. I really enjoyed today. Enjoyed today's conversation. So
that was really good. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much for tuning into the Another Angle podcast. We just had Van Patel in, a weight loss dietitian and emotional eating coach. You'll be able to stream all of today's episode across streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube. Join us again next week.